भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 83 एंटाइटल्ड द्रौपदी मीट्स द क्वींस ऑफ कृष्णा। दिस इज टेक्स्ट नंबर 11।
श्री कालिंदी उवाच तपश्चरन्तिम् अज्ञाय स्वपाद स्पर्शनाशय सख्योपेत्या ग्रहित पानिम् योहम तद्गृह मार्जनी। श्री कालिंदी उवाच तपश्चरन्तिम् अज्ञाय स्वपादो स्पर्शनाशय सख्योपेत्या ग्रहित पानिम् योहम तद्गृह मार्जनी। श्री कालिंदी उवाच तपश्चरन्तिम् अज्ञाय स्वपाद स्पर्शनाशय सख्योपेत्या ग्रहित पानिम् योहम तद्गृहो मार्जनी। श्री कालिंदी उवाच
मतिजीस श्री कालिंदी उवाच। श्री कालिंदी सेड तपह पेनेंसेस चरंतिम एग्जीक्यूटिंग अज्ञाय नोइंग स्व हिस पाद ऑफ द फीट स्पर्शन फॉर द टच आशाय विद द डिजायर साख्य टुगेदर विथ हिस फ्रेंड अर्जुन उपेत्य कमिंग अग्रहित टुक पानिम माय हैंड यह हु अहम आई तत हिस गृह ऑफ द रेसिडेंस मार्जनी द क्लीनर। ट्रांसलेशन श्री कालिंदी सेड द लॉर्ड न्यू आई वॉज परफॉर्मिंग सिवियर ऑस्टेरिटीज एंड पेनेंसेस विद द होप ऑफ वन डे टचिंग हिज लोटस फीट सो ही केम टू मी इन द कंपनी ऑफ हिज फ्रेंड एंड टुक माई हैंड इन मैरिज नाउ I am engaged as a sweeper in his palace. We'll continue reading. There is no purport to this verse. Sri Mitravinda said, at my Swayamvar ceremony, he came forward, defeated all the kings present, including my brothers, who dared insult him, and took me away just as a lion removes his prey from amidst a pack of dogs. Thus, Lord Krishna, the shelter of the goddess of fortune, brought me to his capital city. May I be allowed to serve him by washing his feet life after life. Sri Satya said, my father arranged for 7 extremely powerful and vigorous bulls with deadly sharp horns to test the prowess of the kings who desired my hand in marriage. Although these bulls destroyed the false pride of many heroes, Lord Krishna subdued them effortlessly, tying them up in the same way the children playfully tie up a goat's kids. He thus purchased me with his valor. Then he took me away with my maid servants and a full army of 4 divisions, defeating all the kings who opposed him along the road. May I be granted the privilege of serving that Lord. Sri Bhadra said, my dear Draupadi, of his own free will, my father invited his nephew Krishna, to whom I had already dedicated my heart, and offered me to him as his bride. My father presented me to the Lord with an Akshani military guard and a retinue of my female companions. My ultimate perfection is this, to always be allowed to touch Lord Krishna's lotus feet as I wander from life to life, bound by my karma. Purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. With the word Atmanah, Queen Bhadra speaks not only for herself, but for all living entities as well. The soul's perfection, Shreya Atmana, is devotional service to Lord Krishna, both in this world and beyond in liberation. Srila Jiva Goswami comments that although in civilized society, it is normally considered disrespectful to publicly speak the name of one's guru or husband, Lord Krishna's name is unique. The mere utterance of the name Krishna is commendable as the highest expression of reverence for God. As the Sveteshvatra Upanishad 4.19 states, Yasya Nama Mahadyasya, the holy name of the Lord is supremely glorious. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutaha Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitamtam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Shute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhyevacha Paditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ramo Hare Ramo
Ram Ram Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna. Seeking the blessings of all the devotees so that I can speak something on this very glorious pastime of Krishna. So this particular section of Srimad Bhagavatam is the section where the queens of Dwaraka are talking to Draupadi and they're narrating how Krishna saved each of their lives, how Krishna married them. So if you see from one point of view, it's actually all of them talking about how they got connected with Krishna, how Krishna actually saved their lives from materialism. Now, this is very much what every sadhaka, every devotee also needs to contemplate on, how the devotees, how the spiritual master, how Krishna actually saved their life from materialism. See, in one sense, what the queens of Dwaraka are going through is something that all of us are also going through in our spiritual lives, where the queens, it is possible that they could have been married off to some other king and could have lived a material life, but Krishna came and saved them and married them and brought them to his own abode. And now their aspiration is, now we are married to Krishna, their aspiration is, may we remain servants of Krishna forever. And that's exactly what every sadhaka is also aspiring for. At some point, the spiritual master, the devotees, Krishna himself have done something. Some people's lives, it may not be that dramatic. Some people's lives, it may be very dramatic. You know, Satyabhama's life, Krishna defeated 7 bulls and married Satyabhama. In Bhadra's life, it was like an arranged marriage, you know, very well, simple welcome. And so different devotees get connected with Krishna and the process of Krishna consciousness in different ways. Each one of us have a story to tell. But the essence of the story is that now that we are connected with Krishna, how do we remain eternally servants of Krishna? What is our mood? That's what every story actually talks about. Every wife of Krishna is saying that we are married to Krishna in this way, but now we want to remain eternal servants of Krishna. So here is Krishna Katha going on. The queens of Draupadi, the queens of Krishna are telling Draupadi stories about Krishna, pastimes about Krishna's valor and strength, and Draupadi is listening. Sometime later, sometime before, Draupadi was telling about her story to the queens of Krishna, and the queens of Krishna was listening. So in Krishna Katha, both the speaker and the listener's consciousness is important. And if the speaker and the listener both have the right consciousness, then in that place, Krishna Katha really takes an eternal form, or rather, that subject matter of the discussion becomes a subject of eternal discussions. So here, there's a discussion between the queens of Krishna and Draupadi, and that has become a subject matter for eternal discussion in future. When somebody has a bath in a holy river during, say, the month of Magh or some very cold month. Now, if you go to the Ganga and have bath in the, you know, holy river, it's considered very auspicious. But there are many people who go all the way to visit a holy place. They go almost to the river to have a dip in the river also, fully ready, with equipped with all bathing equipments and all that. But when they come close to the Ganga, the cold water is so intense that they don't have a dip only. They just come back without having a dip. And if somebody asks them, how was it? They will say, first class, very good bath, you know. So, a person who comes to hear Krishna Katha is very much like a person coming to a holy place to have a dip in the holy water. But just like the holy water is sometimes very heavy, very cold, very intense, Similarly, sometimes when we hear Krishna Katha, because the intelligence is so much covered over with so many layers of, our own expectations and our own, flavors, we are unable to hear, focus and hear Krishna Katha. And what essentially it means is that sometimes the mind expects certain type of experience in Krishna Katha, and the mind, if it doesn't get that experience, in Krishna Katha, then the mind says, I can't handle it. I'll not immerse myself in this Katha at all, So, the mind expects something lighter. The mind expects something more entertaining, which it suits its nature. But if you give the mind a heavy Krishna Katha, then the mind says, not possible for me to dip in, So it goes till the brink of Krishna Katha. That means we may physically be coming and sitting in a class also, but mentally, intellectually we switch off. Why? Because we find it is too cold. We find it is too heavy for me to handle. I just don't want to enter it into it at all. And therefore, we don't really get the benefit of Krishna Katha. So here, in this particular pastime, if you look at it from one angle, we find that this pastime is about how the Atma or the individual living entity is connected to Krishna with the help of a spiritual master, through the help of a guru or through the help of some devotees. So every story that we are reading and we are going to read is about how one devotee's life got saved. How one devotee's life got connected with Krishna eternally. And therefore, one of the most important roles of Krishna and the spiritual master is to help us deal with our anarthas. All of us have our own anarthas which prevent us from connecting with Krishna, which prevent us from taking shelter of Krishna completely. And how the spiritual master, how Krishna helps us deal with our anarthas is a story of all our lives. And each of us have individual anarthas that we are dealing with. And the spiritual master and the devotees, their role is to somehow or the other help us deal with our particular anartha and get connected with Krishna. Human life is full of problems. And every day we face these problems constantly. Just like hunger is a problem. And every day we feel hungry. So feeling hungry is also a problem. But many times, when you don't feel hungry at all, that is also a problem. That is considered a disease, lack of appetite, So, if you are hungry, the next problem is what to eat. And if you have food to eat, then the next problem is it tasty? And if you have tasty food to eat, the next question is it satisfying? And if it is satisfying and tasty food to eat, the next question is, it is hygienic, So, you may have food, which is a solution to hunger, but is that food hygienic or not? That determines whether you get food poisoning or not. So, that means, if you eat food which is not right, that also creates problem. If you don't eat any food at all, that also creates problem. If you eat food that has no taste, that also creates problem. If you eat food that has taste but is not, the right nutritious food, that also creates problem. So that means in human life, whatever you do, some problem will be there only. That's a natural outcome, natural situation of human life. Human life is all about balance. All the needs that are there has to be balanced in some way or the other. Just like from an Ayurvedic perspective, there is three things, kapha, vata and pitta. And it's not that I used to always think, my original understanding of kapha, vata, pitta was, if you have vata, lot of problem, you just keep running around all over, If you have kapha, then there is also problem because you just sit down in one place, you don't want to run around at all, you want a more relaxed type of lifestyle. And if you have pitta, I was thinking it is ideal because it is between kapha and vata, robust. No problems at all. But then I realized, all the three have their own roles. Kapha also is needed, Vata also is needed, Pitta also is needed. The balance of all the three is a healthy human being. Similarly, in life, we need a balance of what the scriptures call as Kama, Krodha and Lobha. These three have to be in a balanced proportion in human life. The disturbance of any of the three causes imbalance. Kama is considered to be like Vata. You know, somebody who is filled with desires, he runs around like anything, you know. Heavy Vata propensity. Somebody who is having Kapha is like Lobha, having desire to accumulate a lot, you know. And somebody who is having Krodha or anger is like having heavy Pitta. So all the three needs to be balanced for having a good health. Similarly, in our lives, a human being has to have a balance between the three, these three elements. So that means all our actions have to be monitored in such a way that it doesn't cross a certain karma limit. That means the amount of desire to have something or desire to enjoy, that shouldn't be too high. At the same time, pitta is very good for digestion. But pitta is like krodha or anger. That means if you use that anger in constructive ways, that means being angry at the right time, the right place, the right person, for the right cause. That's like constructive use of anger. But if anger is misused, or anger rather occupies, burns you, then it causes destruction. And same thing with lobha or greed, or excess accumulation. So there is a difference between labha and lobha. Human beings need prosperity. They need labha in their lives. But when labha becomes ati labha, it becomes too much, then it is considered as lobha. That means in life, one needs to have a balance between all the three. It's not that kama is not required. It is not that krodha is not required. It is not that lobha is not required. But all the three needs to be in the right proportion. And that balance is what the role of a spiritual master is, the role of a guru is. Human society tends to create imbalance. The type of society that we live in, too much excess karma, too much excess krodha, too much excess lobha. We find everybody is suffering from excess. And because people are suffering from excess, they tend to be violent people. You find in the corporate world today, so much violence. Why? Because unfulfilled desires, unfulfilled anger. Most of the employees, their complaint is that their bosses are always angry. Just too much anger for them to handle, you know. Why? The bosses have such high expectations from their employees. And naturally, if you don't fulfill it, they blast, they get angry. And every person is having too much lobha. That means, I want to work this much time, but then you want to get so much money, so much opulences. And therefore, it creates a great amount of anxiety. So therefore, human society is like being ruled by demons only. Lust is, lobha or greed is compared to a crocodile. Just swallows us. Just like Gajendra was swallowed by a crocodile, humans tend to be swallowed by the crocodile of greed. Hiranyakashipu represents anger, krodha. So just like Hiranyakashipu, with so much anger, was trying to control society, similarly humans tend to use anger as a means to control others. And Dushasan represents lust or kama. Similarly, humans tend to have so much desire to enjoy what is not theirs, enjoy others' property. And therefore, the understanding that the devotees should have is that, pray to the Lord, my dear Lord, you incarnated in different forms to conquer these demons. You incarnated to destroy this crocodile who was devouring Gajendra. Please incarnate in some way to destroy our greed. You incarnated in the form of Narasingadev to destroy Hiranyakashipu, who was personifying anger. So similarly, please incarnate in some form to destroy our anger. You incarnated in the form of Krishna, who empowered the Pandavas to destroy Dushasan. Similarly, you incarnated in some form to destroy our lust. So essentially, in a human society, where there is a balance between all the three, there tends to be some sanity. Fortunately, karma ends with age. At some point when you become older, lust decreases, desires decrease. Then krodha, it decreases with time. If you are angry at some point, after 1 hour, after 2 hours, after 2 days, your anger will go away. But lobha only increases with time. Greed only increases with time. So no matter how much you do, you just keep feeling more and more hungry. You keep feeling like eating more and more, absorbing more and more. And therefore, for human society to deal with lobha, the way to deal with lobha is by learning to start giving. So the human mind, especially when we come to spiritual life, we tend to become too selfish for our own growth. We tend to become too selfish for our own, to satisfy our own hunger. Spiritual life is a balance between taking and giving. Spiritualists also sometimes tend to become lobhi. That means grab too much, eat too much, all the nectar for oneself. And therefore, the more we eat, the more we absorb, the more we have, we tend to become more and more hungry. Spiritually, lobha is good. It is good to have laulyam. It is good to have greed. But it is also understood that desire to take should also be balanced with the desire to give. And therefore, when we focus on our own taking, somewhere we become imbalanced. Therefore, if we study the life of all the acharyas in the past, none of the acharyas, no matter how exalted they were and how deep they were, they lived for themselves. They always lived a life of giving for others also. That means they balanced their taking along with their giving. Haridas Thakur, who was supposed to be the Namacharya of the holy name, the one who chanted 192 rounds of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, still found some time to give. Can you imagine, you know? After chanting 192 rounds, if he still has some time to give for others, then that's where the concept of balance is. Taking and giving. This is called as yajna, according to the scriptural understanding. In the Ramayana we find Dasharatha Maharaj, he was at a certain point in his life having a problem. He was unhappy that he lacked a son. Can you imagine? He had all the luxuries in the world, but he didn't have a son. So, he definitely had the desire for a son. This is known as sakam. Kam means desire. Sakam means full of desire. So, naturally, if somebody has sakam, if it is somebody is filled with desire, you naturally go to your guru or your teacher. What does the teacher or guru tell? The guru or teacher generally tells, from sakam, you should start practicing nishkam. Give up. You should not have any desire only. Enjoy what you have. Be satisfied with what you have. So when Dasharatha went to Vasishtha, his own guru, interestingly, the guru didn't tell Dasharatha, give up. Give up the desire. He didn't tell Dasharatha that you should not practice sakam, you should practice nishkam. Nishkam bhakti. He said, he didn't tell him, give up the desire. But he told him, do yajna, which is sacrifice. So interestingly, just look at the way the spiritual master helps a disciple deal with his desires. The way the spiritual master helps a disciple deal with his desires is by not telling him, give up desire. He tells him, practice sacrifice. Practice the concept of giving others. So what Dasharatha did for dealing with his desire for having a son is he practiced yajna. He performed a fire sacrifice, he performed the Putra Kameshti Yajna, and the result of performing the Putra Kameshti Yajna What was the purpose of performing the Putra Kameshti Yajna? To have a son that would serve the world. To have a son that would actually act for the welfare of the world. So Vashishta helped Dasharath deal with Sakam not by performing Nishkam, but by performing Yajna. So that is the way in which a spiritualist deals with his desires. In the Mahabharata, we find Drupad Maharaj also performed a similar yajna for having a son. But what was the purpose of that yajna? The purpose of that yajna was to have a son who would kill Drona. And therefore, both Ramayana and Mahabharata talks about yajna being performed for having a son. But here in the Ramayana, we find what is the ideal way in which, the ideal mood in which one should perform yajna. And in the Mahabharata we find what is the mood in which yajna is performed today. Most people perform yajna for their own satisfaction, for their own desire fulfillment. But actually yajna has to be performed for the fulfillment of the world's welfare. And in the process your desire may get fulfilled. So essentially, the spiritual master's role is to help us deal with our desires with a lot of intelligence. Unfortunately, today, the way spiritual masters who don't have the right knowledge deal with the disciples is, either they tell them, no problem in enjoying, enjoy yourself like anything, or they tell them, give up all enjoyment, enjoyment is useless. But the right way in which a spiritual master helps a disciple is by telling them, what is the right way of enjoying? That means enjoyment that gives welfare to the world is actually the right type of enjoyment. And therefore, Dasharatha Maharaj, he was inspired to do this yajna and he had a son who could, was actually delivering the world. And therefore, what is satsang? Satsang essentially is desire management. Satsang, actually, the association of saintly people is to somehow help us have the right desires. When Hanumanji went to Lanka and he was stopped by this lady whose name was Lankini. She stopped him before entering the country of Lanka. And the way Hanumanji dealt with Lankini, so she was, that he boxed her. He gave her one tight box. And when Hanumanji boxed Lankini, she fell down. And when she got up, she was a completely normal person. She told Hanumanji, my dear Hanuman, I've been waiting for you. Brahmaji had told, the day a monkey boxes me, that day Lanka is finished. Please enter Lanka. Essentially, how did Hanuman deal with Lankini? This is what satsang is. Satsang essentially means boxing. Satsang essentially means that the saintly devotees don't box us physically, but box our thinking, box our desires, our faulty thinkings. That means a satsang is a place where we are made to realize our faults, made to realize our shortcomings. And therefore, the moment we realize what our shortcomings are, that means slowly the process of connecting with Krishna will start. So the first step in overcoming our shortcomings, the first step in trying to connect with Krishna is by understanding and accepting our shortcomings. And therefore, for us to be able to deal with our shortcomings, we need to understand what type of a student or a disciple we need to be. Here, all the queens of Krishna, if you look at them from the point of view of being ideal sadhakas, ideal disciples, they had the right attitude for Krishna to come into their lives and save their lives. That means if you look at all the stories over here, each queen is saying, we already had given our heart to Krishna and we were just waiting for him to come. That means they already had some prerequisite qualities in themselves because of which they were ready to allow Krishna to take over their lives, basically. That means no matter how the guru is, the disciple should have his own qualifications to be able to achieve Krishna in his or her life. Many times, a disciple tends to think, it is on the basis of how famous my guru is that I can grow in my spiritual life. Actually, the fact is that there is no connection between Guru's fame and your spiritual growth. Even spiritual masters who have absolutely no fame at all have had disciples who have unlimited amount of fame. So there are so many great exalted personalities whose gurus apparently were unknown people. What to speak of anybody else? Look at Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, whose spiritual master, Gaurakrishna Babaji Maharaj, had literally no disciples at all. So therefore, many times, a disciple tends to think that to show his own greatness, he wants to connect with the guru who is great. And therefore, that's actually a shortcoming in a disciple's mind. So he tends to use the spiritual master as a means to achieve greatness himself. And therefore, it is very important to understand that a spiritual master and a disciple's relationship is on a very sacred level, on a very high level. And there should be no competitive mentality in between this relationship. One time there was a person who became a great scholar. And this fellow would keep moving around and debating people, defeating people like anything. And very soon, he became an extremely well-known scholar all over India, defeating everybody, all scholars. And is going very, very famous. At some point, he returned back to his own guru's house. And the spiritual master, he said, "I am very impressed and happy to see your success." The disciple, instead of, you know, really being humble and falling at the feet of a spiritual master, seeking his blessings, offering all the success to his guru, he started saying, "I have defeated everybody in the world except you." Can you imagine, you know? Instead of being humble and grateful to his guru, his pride was so heavy and his scholarship was so great that he was not even grateful to his own spiritual master. This is exactly what happens if we connect with a spiritual master without having some qualities of your own. That means there has to be some basic culture which actually helps us a launching pad for you to grow from there. The spiritual master, his role is not to give you that basic culture. That basic culture has to already be there in a disciple. Because if that basic culture is not there, no matter if you get the best spiritual master in the world, the most famous spiritual master in the world, and the most qualified spiritual master in the world, still, you will not be able to take off from the launching pad. You will not be able to really grow in your spiritual life. Somewhere, that lack of culture, the lack of the basic ingredients to grow in your spiritual life will pull you down. It will act as a hook that will pull you back down. The role of the spiritual teacher is to first help you find your faults. Unfortunately, the teacher does not help you find your faults unless you have the attitude to accept the fault finding that the teacher gives you. Many times, we may not even have the basic attitude to allow our spiritual master to find our own faults, or allow great devotees to find our own faults. If that is the attitude with which you come to the spiritual master, then no matter who your guru is, no matter how profound your spiritual teacher is, that person cannot help you. So, one time there was a man who was a very well-known saint, you know, and he was on his way to America. Somebody, you know, gave him a ticket and he was on his way to America. So there was another man who was very impressed with, you know, this person going to America. So he came to him and asked him that, you know, "So I heard you're going to America." He said, "Yes." So he said, "Please tell me how that country is, all details. I want to go there also, you know." So then the guru went and came back. And after he came back, this man came to him and started, interrogating him, literally asking all details. He said, "How expensive is that place?" This guru said, "Not expensive at all. There is no expense at all." This man said, "No, I am not a guru. I am a simple person. And nobody is going to sponsor my ticket or all. Please tell me how expensive it is." The guru told him, "I am telling you it is not expensive at all. Because right now, you are only thinking of going. As long as you are only thinking of going, there is no expense at all." When you actually go, expense will start. So this is many times the nature, or rather the situation in many people's spiritual lives. As long as one is thinking of practicing spiritual life, there is no expense. There is no problem. But the moment one actually thinks of practicing it, all problems start. Spiritual life on an external level is very easy to practice. But when you actually dive into spirituality, that is when you have to really deal with your anarthas. That is when you have to really deal with all your shortcomings, and then you realize it's really expensive. Because till the moment we are not coming face to face with our shortcomings, we don't have any problems at all in practicing spiritual life. Spiritual life is fun. But the day we come to a stage where we have to face our shortcomings, that time we realize spiritual life is expensive. It's not fun at all. And most times when it comes to this stage, we are not prepared for it. We are not ready for it. And that is the time we think we should take a backstage, you know. Invariably, at every devotee's life, there will be a stage where you have to face your shortcomings very powerfully. And that is the time when the trip starts becoming expensive. Till that point of time, it is a sponsored trip, you know, somebody is taking you ahead. But the moment you come to a stage in your life where you have to deal with your anarthas to go to the next level, it doesn't become a sponsored trip anymore. It becomes a very expensive trip. The spiritual master's role is to help us deal with this very expensive trip in apparently what seems to be a simple way, or rather a easy to deal way. One time, one devotee was asked by the Lord, what kind of love do you want to develop towards me? Do you want to develop the love that Narad Muni has towards me? Do you want to develop the love that Hanumanji has towards me? Do you want to develop the love that, you know, Prahlad Maharaj has towards me? What type of love do you want to develop towards me? And this devotee gave a very interesting answer. He said, I am not even qualified to take these people's names. They are so exalted devotees. I want to develop the love towards you just like a lusty man has towards a woman or a greedy man has towards money. That is the love that I want to develop. The Lord was very surprised. He said, what is this? You don't want to develop love like Prahlad Maharaj and Narad Muni and all. So he said, my dear Lord, I want to develop the love that I can relate with. I cannot relate with the love of Prahlad Maharaj. I cannot relate to the love of, you know, Narad Muni and all the exalted devotees. But I can relate to the love of a greedy person for money. Because that's something that I can very easily connect with. So the spiritual master's role, or the guru's role, is to help us find faults. Find our own faults and deal with our own faults with ease. Our faults are very difficult, very complicated. But the role of a spiritual master is to simplify the way we deal with our faults. And the greater the spiritual master's ability to help us deal with complicated faults in a simple way, that's the greatness of a spiritual master. Because, unfortunately, we have eyes, we have a vision, but we don't have a mirror. Most people are expert in using their eyes to see others' faults. The spiritual master's role is to keep a mirror in front of us. That means use our eyes first to see our own faults. Unfortunately, we become experts in seeing others' faults. And we become experts to an extent we can find faults in everything in the organization, everything in other devotees, but somehow or the other, we miss to look at the mirror. And somewhere down the line, the spiritual master's role is to just help us see the mirror constantly. And the more we look at the mirror, the more we realize there is so much to do inside me that there is no time to see outside me. There is no time to see others' faults, outside fault. So many others may have thousands of faults. But what about the, like Bhaktisiddhanta Sarathakur would say, that we are honeycombed with faults ourselves. By the time we deal with all our faults, we'll realize we have no time with dealing with, or rather exploring other people's faults. And that's the role of a spiritual master, who helps us deal with our faults in a way that can really uplift us. And how does the spiritual master do that? The spiritual master does that by helping us take short steps to discipline ourselves. If you tell that you take a massive step to discipline yourself, impossible. Tomorrow onwards, I will have no lust in me. Gone. The moment you say that I'll have no lust in me, that day only you will have a lot of problems. The spiritual master understands that we cannot take big steps to deal with our anarthas or shortcomings. So the spiritual master designs small steps. Take one step at a time, and then slowly, at a point, you'll be able to get rid of all your anarthas. One time, there was a saint who had gone to a village. And the saint was somebody whom everyone loved so much. He stayed in the village for a certain duration of time. Every day people would hear classes, people would hear his katha. And one day came and he was leaving the place. All the villagers came to him and they said, "We will be missing you." So he told all of them, "If you want to feel my presence, each and every one of y'all should take one vow that will remind you of me." So all the people were so inspired. Each one started coming and offering one vow of giving up all his anarthas. You know, somebody said, "I'll stop smoking from today." Somebody said, "I'll stop drinking." Somebody said this, somebody that. So everyone is giving different promises in the ears of the guru. One fellow, he was a farmer, he said, "This is too much for me. I can't do all these things, but I want to do something for him." He went to the teacher and he said, "I want to give up something, but I can't give up these big things. Very difficult for me. Tell me something that I can easily do." So the saint told him, "I'll tell you something very simple. You don't have to do very big complicated things. Just do this one thing for me. Before you eat your daily meal, whatever meals you eat, you should see the face of someone. You take a vow that you will not eat without seeing the face of one person." So he said, "Whoever it may be, you decide." So he said, "That's very simple. I can do it. I'll take that vow." And then he started thinking, "Whose face will I see, you know, before eating?" So he said, "I don't want to go to Lord Shiva and see his face, because temple is very far away from my house." He said, "I don't want to go to Krishna's temple also. Krishna's temple is very close, but darshan keeps closing and, you know, opening. I mean, not guarantee when Krishna will be open." So he started thinking, "Whose face should I see?" Then finally he came to his house, and opposite his house was a potter's house. And the potter had a donkey. He said, "I'll take a vow, I'll see this donkey's face before eating, you know." And every day, religiously, he would see the donkey's face before he eat his meals. So many days passed like that. One day, we saw the donkey was missing. So he got in great anxiety. "Now I can't eat without seeing the donkey." He said, "Forget this vow, I don't want this vow." But then he realized, you know, the first time in so many days it happened, maybe I should just find the donkey. So he went around and asked the son in that potter's house, "Where is your father and where is the donkey?" He said, "Father has taken the donkey to the field." So this fellow started running around trying to find where the donkey is. And finally he found that this potter, he was digging a ground. And actually this potter had found a box of gold coins inside the ground. And he had taken the donkey to carry the box of gold coins back. This man somehow reached at the right time, you know. The potter didn't want anybody to see. He started shouting, "I have found it, I have seen it," you know. This potter got anxious. He thought he saw the gold. This fellow was saying, "I saw the donkey's face," basically, you know. And finally the potter said, "You know, don't worry, I will share my, you know, gold with you, don't tell anybody," and all that. And finally this man came back with his share of gold coins. And he had this one realization. The realization that this man had was that if by observing a small spiritual discipline with determination, I got so much gold, what if I observe some really big spiritual disciplines of determination? This small incident actually helped him find the real treasure that he was looking for. Many times in life, we need to have small experiences before we decide to take up the big leap, the big jump. The spiritual master's role is to help us have these small experiences of positivity by giving up small things, taking small vows of discipline. And slowly, as a person makes these small vows of discipline, you come to a stage where you realize that unless I deal with my big problems, big, you know, miseries, or rather the big shortcomings, we'll not be able to really connect with Krishna. And then slowly, over a period of time, one gets a determination to deal with the big problems also. So here we find Krishna exactly like the spiritual master who is helping all these devotees one by one deal with their shortcomings and connect with him very strongly. I'll end with one small story. Once upon a time, this is in Vrindavan, Krishna was performing some pastimes. He was playing a game of hide and seek. And Krishna hid himself and all his devotees were searching for him. All his friends, the gopas. And suddenly, somehow, the gopas found him and caught him. And Krishna asked, how did you find me? I hid in such a complicated place. How did you manage to find me? And the gopas, they told him, they said that we saw the peacocks were dancing. And they said, peacocks dance usually when they see rain clouds. And in this direction there were no rain clouds, still they were dancing. We understood, they must have seen your body and they, mistook that to be rain clouds and they're dancing. So Krishna was very impressed seeing their intelligence. Actually, this is how one sees or one can recognize Krishna, one can connect with Krishna. Krishna is very difficult to find. Krishna is very, he hides himself in such places where he is untraceable literally. So how do you find Krishna who is untraceable? Try to look for him in the voice of devotees. When the devotees are in ecstasy and they are singing and dancing, that is a place where you will find Krishna hiding. And therefore, when great devotees of the Lord exhibit Krishna, show how Krishna connected with them in their lives, we find Krishna connects with his devotees when he sees the devotees having the right attitude. And in addition, when the devotees have a great hankering to connect with him and they're ready to let go all their shortcomings by taking guidance from the spiritual master, and somehow, slowly over a period of time, when they develop the right attitude, then Krishna manifests in their lives. And even when Krishna manifests in their lives, what do the devotees actually hanker for? Continued service, continued connection, and continued ability to serve Krishna in a menial way. So the devotees don't think that connecting with Krishna is the end of their destiny, of their journey. They feel that connecting with Krishna is the beginning of their opportunity to serve Krishna eternally. So the journey never ends. The journey continues in the form of active service for life. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. If there is anything I spoke which is beyond my realizations, please forgive me. There's something that I spoke that has helped you all. I would consider that to be my fortune. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.